Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Transformation Cafe with your host, Robin Misevich. Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about health, wellness, happiness, personal growth, spirituality, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
Hi, everyone. I want to welcome you to the Transformation Cafe. I'm your host, Robin Misevich, and we are in the middle of our cafe book club with Codependent No More by Melody Beatty. It's our 30 years of working with codependents, and actually Melody Beatty was the author and the creator of the word codependent. So we're very happy to be, you know, just walking through these different chapters. And boy, like always, this is just we're in the basics of self-care part two, and I'll get my co-host, Miss Amy. How are you doing tonight?
I am excited about what we're doing. This is, I feel like a lot of people are excited about what we're doing too, and it's helping people already.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to just, you know, it's one thing really nice about doing a podcast. You can jump on at any time and be able to be walking through the different themes of just the different chapters and stuff that we've got going on with stuff. And those comments and the conversations can really be something that'll add to any kind of, just processes that you're wanting to do with yourself and with groups. And we're really glad to be able to be putting this work out here right now. So we, again, want to thank Melody for all the work that she does. Boy, that's one thing I really learned about Melody Beatty I didn't know before we had gotten into this on the second level, is she is a girl who does her homework. She's always, when she became a counselor with drug addiction and then just becoming a writer, everything that she's done, she's really just devoted herself to really learning as much as she could as she goes through the process to just be in integrity and be the best in the information of whatever she's writing about or processing and being available for people to really help them to be in a place where they feel like they've got some answers. Because I know for her personally, that's something that she really walked into, realizing that there's just no support systems here. How can I help to in this field and with these people really just on whatever level make a difference? And she writes in the book that, you know, when she wrote the book, she thought she'd only be a handful of people that would benefit from the book, not having any idea that, you know, it's been in I don't know how many multiple languages and just so many people over the years that have really benefited from the work.
And it continues.
And it continues, yeah. So we're going to be going through chapters 10 through 14 tonight. And, you know, it's, learning to live your own life, having a love affair with yourself, learning the art of acceptance, and feeling your own feelings, and also working with those feelings, looking at anger in particular, because that's something that's a real dynamic chapter that I'm looking forward when we get to that. So our first one on chapter 10 is live your own life. So Amy, you want to jump on that, and then we can walk through this chapter?
Yeah, right at the very beginning of this chapter, I think, you know, let's just sit with this statement. The surest way to make ourselves crazy is to get involved in other people's business. And the quickest way to become sane and happy is to tend to our own affairs.
Amen, sister.
Wow.
Yeah, I read that and I was just like, amen to that.
Amen to that. And I think that's what everything's been about. And it's the bottom line is heal or heal thyself, right? And it's really, you know, the addiction really becomes being in control of things or thinking that we are, and then it's really important that we have to do our own work and be a mentor of that, and other people, that if they want to, they can certainly learn from that, and if they don't, they won't, and that's all okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, in that same first page, it says, I remember the day I faced that truth. For a long time, I had blamed my unfortunate circumstances on other people. You are the reason I am the way I am, as I screeched. Look what you made me do, and my minutes, my hours, my life. After I detached and looked responsible for myself, I wondered maybe other people weren't the reason I hadn't been living my own life. Maybe they were just the excuses that I needed. And I thought that was a really great paragraph that she wrote about that. Because it's, you know, those things that we allow on whatever level. And I think, you know, we've talked about this before in some of the other chapters, how it's, you know, some of it could be just the dynamics of community and even gender sometimes that you're taught, you know, to put yourself, you know, don't be, you know, taking care of yourself more than another person, and just some of these other things that really can sabotage the way that we can actually be doing a level of self-care. Not that there's, you know, there's definitely, you know, ways of being healthy and unhealthy. But really, you know, some of this has been something that's been perpetuated in a lot of different aspects of society.
Mm-hmm. I want to kind of jump into pages 114 and 115, where they really talk about self-care. And I've been working in this field really very solidly for 20 years. And I think a lot of people struggle with the whole term of self-care and taking care of yourselves. And she talks about it here, the third paragraph, about taking care of ourselves, a phrase used and abused. I've heard people use it to control, impose upon, or force their wills on others. And I have seen that many, many times. Taking care of yourself should not be an excuse to take advantage of others. And I think I believe you too, that we want to really help people to see this in a whole new light. That it isn't about how do I leverage others, but how do I truly take care of myself, be a good role model for others to follow. And on that last paragraph on 114 through the whole first paragraph, I'm not going to read all of it, but I think that could be something really important to read and maybe do some journaling on. But that last paragraph on 114 starts with, those behaviors are not what I mean by taking care of ourselves. Is it doing crazy things, overspending money, doing all kinds of things that really don't help you or help anybody else? Self-care is an attitude towards ourselves and our lives that says, I'm responsible for myself. I'm responsible for leading or not living my life. I'm responsible for attending to my spiritual, emotional, physical, and financial well-being. And then it goes on quite a bit, but it just really comes down to, I am the leader of my own life. I am the leader of how I take care of myself from a highest good perspective.
Yeah, and I really like that, you know, as we go into page 115, it shows us a quote middle of the page. It says, self-care is an attitude of mutual respect. It's meaning to learn to live with our lives responsibly, allowing others to live their lives as they choose, as long as they don't interfere with our decisions to live as we are. You know, taking care of ourselves is not as selfish as some people would assume it is, but it is neither as selfish as many codependents would believe. And, you know, it really goes into, you know, over and over again when it comes to self-care, you know, as a codependent, you really look to other people to give you a sense of definition of where you are. And as we go through these chapters, you're going to really be seeing how, you know, ultimately it's taking your life back, taking your choices back, and, you know, being able to own your feelings again. And so it's a very powerful way of being able to embrace yourself and to get back into a sense of, like, who am I and what, you know, how can I be walking in the world that, you know, and taking care of myself. And as I take care of others, I can take care of, you know, take care of myself and take care of others. I think it's all really, you know, one definitely is this supports the whole. So I think that's really important.
Mhm. Mhm. So, and for me, winding it home with this chapter is on page 118, as the activities, and she talks about taking the time to stop and ask yourself, what do you need to do to take care of yourself, and then what do you need from other people around you? And what I find, I'm working with lots and lots of people, that they are dumbfounded when you ask them that question. What do they need from other people? When I ask people, what can I do for you? They have no answer. So it may be for yourself taking some time to really think about and answer that question. And then if you're supporting somebody, know that that may be a really hard question to answer, and that you may need to help them to spend some time to be really open to what the heck does that mean for them.
Yeah, so, you know, that could be journaling and being able just to be in just in a place where you're being introspective about that for yourself. And you know, and not necessarily feeling like you have to have the answer immediately. Allow yourself a little bit of time to figure out what that could be, you know, and just journaling every day for maybe a week or so and see what comes out, you know, comes up for you, so you can be able to look at it and being able to, you know, be hopefully appreciate yourself in a new way, being able to have that. So chapter 11, having a love affair with yourself, and she starts out the quote, the book, you know, the chapter with a quote from William Shakespeare about, you know, this above all, to thine own self be true. So it's a really wonderful book, you know, really a wonderful chapter. It really talks about, you know, just different ways that we can learn to disguise our true feelings about ourselves. And, you know, part of it could be the way that I dress and I look to the outside world.
but yet there's still a denying of myself and who I really am. And this really gets into just levels of being able to be having self-confidence and really coming from just the ways that our mental chatter and things like that can be detrimental to ourselves, because when it comes to self-confidence.
Well, and they're really equating self-worth with love and, you know, self-love, that unconditional love of self, which most people, I don't believe, have ever really experienced that. And so I think having a love affair with yourself, for me, is learning how to unconditionally love myself. And thus, I've been, it helping me as I'm learning that, that how to unconditionally love others and unconditionally love the life I have and the life around me. So I think that is what this comes down to. And they talk a lot about the ways that we don't love ourselves. And I think it's important that we start looking at the case, which is true for all of us at some extent or another, whether we want to admit it or not. What are some ways I can really step into unconditionally loving myself? And in page 121, on the 1, 2, 3, about the fourth paragraph, about midway, and this really hits home for me, we think we have to do something for people to get and keep their friendships, to keep their love. And that's definitely been an ongoing theme for me. If I just do one more thing, if I just try a little harder, they'll really love me. They'll be there for me. They'll start asking me to do things, and that is not going to work. It's got to be, you got to really love yourself, be a kind and loving person, and then, you know, then people, and be who you are, whatever that is. And then if people like that, great. And if they don't, then that's okay, too, because there's going to be other people who really will.
Yeah, so if you go on page 122, she says, actually, it doesn't matter when we began torturing ourselves. What matters is that we must stop now, right now. We can give ourselves a big emotional and mental hug. We are okay. It's wonderful to be who we are. Our thoughts are okay. Our feelings are appropriate. We're right where we're supposed to be today, this moment. There's nothing wrong with us. There's nothing fundamentally wrong with us. If there were something wrong, that's okay. We are doing the best we could. I think that's something that, you know, just giving yourself a break and recognizing that, you know, we're all learning and changing and growing and being able to accept those things is, we are the greatest thing that will ever happen to us. She said, believe it. It makes life much easier. I thought that was a really great sentence.
Yep.
Yeah. Being able to love and just...
And if there's some, you know, it's always like that. I love you, but I don't like your behaviors. So you may feel guilty about things you've done, and it's rightfully so sometimes. It's when you're overly beating yourself up for no really good reason. And if there are issues, then make amends and go fix it. And don't keep replicating that problem. So I think that's what it all comes down to, is what do I need to do in my life to make myself better, make my life better, so I don't have to keep apologizing, so I don't have to feel bad about myself, because I'm doing the work.
Yeah, and I love how Amy's such a good model of that. We've had a couple conversations over this last weekend, and she was always talking about, you know, it's not you, it's just that thing, you know, whatever the action was or whatever, you know, that makes you being able to look at, you know, yourself and being able to embrace yourself in new ways. Just the love we give and receive will be enhanced by the love we give ourselves. So, you know, everything is just going to be a mirror of what we have going on within ourselves when it comes to our outer world. So, you know, if there are things that are being difficult in the outer world, you know, stop and say, you know, have I been kind to myself? Have I given myself a break today? Have I allowed myself to be in a place where I can feel heard and nurtured within myself, and that, you know, being able to have that ripple out to our external experience system.
Yeah, and for me, it's all good, or not, and that's all good, too. So on the activity on page 127 is, you know, writing about how you feel about, you know, whether you like yourself or not, and what do you do to, keep, you know, try to get people to love you. And so for me, I wrote a little mini letter to God. I've had an overpowering need to get love and attention from others, and I need help to love myself and them in balance. And I'm letting go of that and asking for the help that's above my pay grade.
great.
So in chapter 12, we're learning the art of acceptance. And what I thought was really great and amazing at the same time is we've actually done a couple different shows that support a lot of what this chapter is talking about. Back on TC 328, we did the art of acceptance, accepting what is. And that was on election night, which I thought was interesting. And then on our TC 329 was with Mickey Wade, and we were talking about the grief therapy. And both of these things are part of the art of acceptance. So, Amy, you want to go ahead and jump into that?
I love the quote at the beginning, Bob Newhart, you know, from the Bob Newhart show. He says, "I like to make a motion that we face reality." They're like, wow, that's what a powerful statement that is, because we're so busy trying to, when I say the definition of potential, they ain't done it yet. And I have myself been in relationship with potential in many, many people my whole life, and I'm going to let go of that and accept the reality that they're either doing it or they ain't doing it. And either way is okay, but I'm not going to be in relationship with potential anymore. Can I get an amen, sister?
Amen, said that. So along with that, too, is acceptance brings peace. It is frequently the turning point for change. It is also much easier said than done. I think that was really great that she wrote that part. But it really gives us something when it comes to levels of, you know, thinking and learning about acceptance. And moving on to page 133, really talks about to understand acceptance doesn't mean that it's adaptation. And he says, it doesn't mean resignation to the sorry or miserable way of things. It doesn't mean accepting or tolerating any sort of abuse. It means, for the present moment, we acknowledge and accept our circumstances, including ourselves and the people in our lives, as we and they are. It is only from the state that we have that peace and the ability to evaluate these circumstances. Many appropriate changes evaluate these circumstances, make appropriate changes, and solve our problems. A person who is being abused will not make the decisions necessary to stop that abuse until he or she acknowledges that abuse. The person must then stop pretending the abuse will somehow magically end. Stop pretending it doesn't exist, or stop making excuses for its existence. In a state of acceptance, we are able to respond responsibly to our environment. And in the state, we receive the power to change the things we can. I thought that was really great.
Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite acronym for denial, don't even know I'm lying.
Yeah, that is good. That's very good.
And then that's it. Once you see it, you have to do something about it. And that's the thing. It takes the courage to say, "What am I? What? Something's not working. What's going on here?" It's easy to make it about the other, make the other. Not that I'm saying things aren't happening outside of you, but how you react to it is always up to you. And doing the work to change it. If you really don't like it, it's not working for you, go do something else. And I really want to do a little bit of caution here. Like you'd said, the podcast that we had done with Mickey Wade, and we talked about the grief recovery program. I really recommend you go back and look at that. They do talk about Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and her stages of grief, and it's a wonderful information. She talks about denial, and that those are the stages you go through because you're overwhelmed. It's too much, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Knowing that there really isn't a set pattern. Everybody goes through things differently. There are lots of other models out there that are really good. That's one good one. But people, it isn't as straightforward and as easy as that. And part of it is knowing, you know, who you are and what you need. And as we've said before in other shows, if you find yourself in trouble and not being able to get out of bed, uncontrollably crying, not, you know, doing behaviors that don't make sense to you, please get professional help. And see what is available for you. And I know Andy, our producer, has done a wonderful job of providing lots of great material. And if you need professional help, it's out there. Don't give up until you find it. So anything else on that? I think I said I love that process, but Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, but it is not, you know, the Holy Grail. It is a process, and it isn't straightforward. You go through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Right. People are going to go in whatever way, you know, that they go in it. It's not necessarily, one through five kind of thing. And one thing I wanted to put along with this, too, is that Esther Olson, they also called it the forgiveness process. So it's something that, you know, not necessarily grief itself, but just in the level of being able to have the stages of working through something, have a sense of control that is usually present as hope, which is sometimes unrealistic. It says we will probably go through these processes, anything that is a fact in our lives that we have not accepted. So anytime you have any kind of change, there's going to be some, you know, processes of, you know, grief and forgiveness and just having things moving to just a new way of, you know, being in any kind of change. You know, it can be positive or negative. It's something where we can catch ourselves going through different phases of us being able to process stuff to move into our new sense of where we are now. So it's in, you know, I love this quote that from the consultant says the only way is through, the only way out is through. And I think that's something that we really need to remember, that, you know, it's just being gentle with ourselves, and that sometimes, you know, when you're going through a process, it can feel draining. It can feel like you really need that much more self-care, depending on what's going on with your circumstances, to, you know, give yourself a break, give yourself a little time to be, you know, if you feel tired, to rest. If you feel like you need to be eating a little better, do that too. So it goes back to so many shows that we've had about being able to be in a place of self-care and what that can look like, you know, even with just catching yourself in positive thought as opposed to negative chatter and things like that. So that's all things that really add to this chapter.
Mhm. Mhm. So on page 140, some really good questions that really help you really look at grief and get you started on that. One thing I love about the grief recovery program, there is a very distinct process, and you can do that any time in a grief process. You don't have to wait, you know, to get over it, because you're not going to. So you've got some activities there, but no, there's a lot of really good help for you out and that's available. So sliding into 13, where you'd already kind of give us a foreboding of where we were heading, feeling your own feelings. And I love the quote to start that off by John Powell: "When I express my emotions, my stomach keeps score." And I'd almost like to say, when I don't express my feelings and my emotions, is when my stomach or my headache or my whatever keeps score.
Mm-hmm. So this codependence, we frequently lose touch with our emotional parts of ourselves. Sometimes we withdraw emotionally to avoid being crushed. Being emotionally vulnerable is dangerous. Hurt becomes piled up into hurts, and no one seems to care. It becomes safer to go away, and we become overloaded with pain, so we short-circuit to protect ourselves. And oh my gosh, that's, you know, just seeing people and how they've been able to just kind of move from, you know, being somebody who really could accept themselves in situations to where when you've got, you know, and this can come from, you know, dealing with somebody who's got addictions. If you're personally, you know, a primary person who's helping with an ill person, there's just so many aspects of self-care, you know, when we put ourselves second or third or fourth, depending on circumstances that we have going in our lives, how we just really can lose ourselves when it comes to being able to feel and know what's really going on with everything.
And 149, where we talked about a little bit earlier about getting professional help, she talks about in the third paragraph, the last sentence, that we may want to seek professional help if we've been repressing feelings for a long period of time, or if we suspect that what we've been repressing is intense. Because, you know, once you open Pandora's box, if you don't know what to do with it, if you're not working with a professional, I think you have to be careful, because, you know, all kinds of people can get you to start opening up and start sharing things, but if they don't know how to help you process it, that could be a problem.
Yes, she says sometimes it takes only a little bit of practice and awareness to awaken that emotional part of ourselves, and like Amy's really recommending, you know, once that is open, having somebody as a gentle guide can really make a difference. But along with that, you know, she says some things that can help to be able to get in touch with yourself could be, you know, writing a letter that you don't intend to send, talking to safe people, which could be your counselors and professionals, spending some quiet time in meditation, make the awareness of ourselves as a habit. And I think that part of that too is like, you know, how am I feeling? you know, what do I need right now? You know, kind of going back to that last chapter and being able to have that as a touchstone for myself. And, you know, when you are coming from a place, maybe when you feel overwhelmed or feeling like, you know, I need to have that break, you know, being able to, you know, get yourself to a safe place or a safe person where you can feel like you can have that break and being able to, you know, get in touch with your feelings in a way that's safe, with having safe people and a safe environment around you.
And then the exercises for this chapter are page 150. This whole feeling thing, that is huge. So that is, and there's lots of other things that you can do. So be gentle with yourself as you're going through that chapter. And know, like I said, you there's a lot of work that can be done there if you have not done that work. And talking about feelings, sliding into 14, which is really focused on anger, I think is really important work. She talks about, let's see, on page 151, if you don't deal with those feelings, if you don't let yourself have anger, you become rigid and mistrustful. Rage consumes you without a satisfying outlet. Anyone who walks into your house can feel the anger vibrations. There's no escape from it. Whoever thought you would turn into such a self-righteous witch. And that's the thing. If you don't learn how to deal with your emotions, especially those quote-unquote negative ones, and you will let anger start ruling your life, it will. It rules your life and everybody else around you's lives. And the last part of this page, anger can become a part of our lives. It can become our lives. And I wouldn't wish that on anybody.
Yeah, you know, this is just when it comes to being able to just generally get in touch with our feelings. Boy, anger has been, it's just such a taboo about, you know, allowing yourself to be anger. If you go on page 153, there's actually myths about anger. And I think it's really good to be able to talk about it. It's not okay to feel angry. Angry is a waste of time and energy. Good, nice people don't feel angry. We shouldn't feel angry when we do. We'll lose control and go crazy if we get angry. People will go away if I get angry with them. Other people should never feel angry toward us. And if anger gets, and if others get angry with us, we have done something wrong. So, and there's this just another dozen of these different things. So, you know,
yeah.
Anger is sinful. It's okay to feel angry only when you are justified. So there's just a whole gambit of different things about, you know, just like with grief, there's all these myths about what grief can be. There's a lot of myths that are basically in society about, you know, anger being, you know, what it is and what it isn't. And, you know, again, you know, knowing how to be able to walk through that, and we're going to actually have some steps about, you know, ways that we can, you know, do it in a healthy way and know that there's ways that we can, you know, blow off steam and be able to do it in ways that is safe for us and safe for others at the same time. So.
And then, there's a lot to this. And just know, again, watch through this. There's a lot of good help out there for dealing with anger. I know I was a contract negotiator for the Department of Defense. And I had to learn how to use my anger in a positive way, because I believe anger can be a fuel for driving a vehicle in a positive way, or a movement, or it can be used to burn down bridges. So I learned how to be able to be very strong in emotion, but use it in a positive way. Not always, but I'm much better about it now than I used to be. And on page 161 are several really great questions to help you with that. So I know we only have a very short period of time. Next week will be dark on the 27th. And January 3rd, we'll be doing chapters 15 through 20 and workbook lesson 4. And then we just decided on January 10th to tie everything together, because I think that would be a really lovely thing to do. So just real quickly, we just have a little bit of time. Lesson 3, anything kind of that, Robin, for you before we bring it on home?
We'll kind of review what it is for our listeners.
It really talks about the second part of the 12-step process, and being able to just realize that I need help. I can't do this by myself, and knowing that a power greater than me can help me through this. It is not my job to tell you to understand your higher power. And that's really about you figuring that out for yourself. And a couple of things out of this, there's a website. I don't know if you got a chance to look at it, Robin, Addictions. It's addictionwithaz.com. It's got some really interesting things in there. It's got sayings and slogans and proverbs. So that could be a good resource for you. And they talk about goal setting and how we don't, you know, as a codependent tend to do that. So and that's on page 58. So I have a really cool process. It's called the 7 F's. And I'm doing a visioning process 6 months out in each of the 7 areas, friends, family, faith, finances, more than that. I can't think of them off the top of my head, but I will send that to Andy. And so you vision 6 months from now where you want to be in each area, and then the next week you take a step. I think that's a really simple, easy 6 month visioning action process, goal process. So we'll get that up. And then,
And I think, you know, the fact that we're going to be Dark Next Week, that would be a really cool thing for people to have an opportunity to be able to look at that for a couple weeks and give themselves some time to, you know, walk through that too. So.
And then the power stance, I think, would be good in that process too. And we did with the presence, Amy Cuddy's
with
book.
Amy Cuddy. Mm-hmm. You
yeah,
become a starfish. There you go.
There you go. And going through those set of podcasts, I think, would be helpful too.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. We really want to thank all of our regular diners at the cafe all over the world. We just thank you for your contributions and your comments. We really just love to hear from you. And just all the people who are really getting impacted by these podcasts, we really want to thank you for letting us know how it's going for you. And just, you know, the different ideas and things that are helping you to just have that much better of 2017. So we really want to thank everybody for that as well. So, and I want to thank my lovely sister, Amy, always being a wonderful co-host that she is.
I'm excited about that, the work we're doing, and have a great holiday season. We've got all kinds of holidays coming up. Enjoy those. And I know you and Andy have a big anniversary coming up on the 27th, and we will definitely be celebrating that.
Woo-hoo! Woo-hoo! So we want to thank everybody here. And as always, like I said, and if you have any questions, comments, please leave them over at the transformation-cafe.com. There it is. And just thanking everybody. That's it. That's it. Yeah, that's it.
Right. That's it for the year, baby. We're out.
Yeah,
we're out.
We're going to drop the mic. Yeah, exactly. So thank you all for joining us. Have a wonderful holiday, and we'll see you next year. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.